Welcome to episode 1471 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day, based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. Today, we continue our series on the lives and times of those whom Jesus charged with carrying the gospel to Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. And we turn to Matthew, another unlikely apostle, a man whose life before Jesus was measured in accounts, obligations, and debts. He was a tax collector who made his living serving the interests of Rome and profiting from his own people. Unlike fishermen who could return to their boats, Matthew occupied a world from which there was no easy return. His choices had made him prosperous, but they had also placed him outside the respectability of his community. Then one day Jesus stopped at his table and said two words, Acts of the Apostles, Part 5, Chapter 1.
My father was Alphaeus. He was an ordinary man, which I mean as praise. He worked, prayed, kept Sabbath, paid what Rome demanded, and complained about Rome afterward like everyone else. My mother taught me the prayers before I understood what the words meant. Whatever I eventually became, I did not learn it from them. I was good with numbers early. Numbers behaved themselves. They did not change according to who was speaking or what someone wanted to be true. Seven was seven. A debt was a debt. If three measures of grain were worth a certain amount on Monday, they were worth the same amount on Tuesday, unless something measurable had changed. I like that about numbers. My father thought this gift might make something respectable of me. Perhaps a merchant. Perhaps a scribe, if we could manage the education. I do not think it occurred to him that Rome would eventually discover the same gift. And so, I kept accounts for a living. That is the simplest way to say it. Levi bar Alphaeus, called Matthew, later the name that stuck, sat at a table on the road between Capernaum and the territories beyond, and every person and every cart and every animal that passed paid what was owed, and I wrote it down, and the numbers went to Rome, and a portion came back to me. I knew exactly what I was. I want to say that at the outset, because there is a version of this story in which the tax collector is an innocent man trapped by circumstance. A good person doing what he had to do, a victim of a system larger than himself. That is not my story. I chose the table. The money was real. The collaboration was real. The contempt of my neighbors was deserved. What I want to tell you is not how to feel sorry for me. I want to tell you about the price of following, what it costs to not follow, and what it costs to betray. I have watched all three from close range. We will begin at the table. Rome did not collect its own taxes in the provinces. It auctioned the right to collect. A man would bid for a tax district, pay Rome up front a fixed sum, and then collect from the people of that district, keeping the difference between what he collected and what he had paid. The more you extracted, the more you kept. The system was designed for a particular kind of person. Not cruel, necessarily. Cruelty was inefficient, but unsentimental. Able to sit across a table from a man who could not pay what you were asking and find a way to make him pay anyway. I was good at it. I had a head for numbers and a face that stayed calm. I told myself various things about this. That the system was going to exist whether I sat at the table or not, that someone else would take the contract if I did not. All of this was partially true. None of it was the whole truth. The whole truth was simpler. I wanted the money, and this was how you got it, and I was willing to pay the social cost. The social cost was considerable. Tax collectors were ritually unclean. Our constant contact with Gentile goods and money made us perpetually impure. We were excluded from the synagogue as witnesses, grouped in the same breath with prostitutes and Gentiles and the irredeemably corrupt. I had a community of sorts, other collectors, people who cannot afford to judge each other because they have already been judged. It was a life. It was also a cage, a comfortable one, lined with coins, but a cage nonetheless. I had heard about Jesus before the day he called me. You could not live in Capernaum and not have heard. He had taught in the synagogue. I was not permitted to enter as a witness. He had healed Peter's mother-in-law. The stories circulated the way stories do when something unprecedented is happening and people do not have a category for it. He passed my booth sometimes. Capernaum was not a large city. I noticed him. You notice a man who does not look at you the way everyone else looks at you. Most people passing a tax booth develop a particular expression, a careful blankness, or poorly concealed hostility, or hurried compliance. Jesus looked at me the way you look at a person, without the calculation, without the distance. I noticed this. I filed it away. And then one morning, he stopped. He came around to the side of the booth where I was sitting and said two words.
Follow me.
No explanation, no negotiation, no acknowledgement of what I was or what following would require. Just follow me. Words stated with the authority of someone who has direct access to the truth of things and is speaking from inside it. I got up. I left the table, the accounts, the money, the contract with Rome and the comfortable cage. I followed him down the road. People have asked me what I was thinking in that moment. The honest answer is, I was not thinking. I had spent years calculating the cost of everything, the value of everything, the return on every transaction, and in that moment, the calculation stopped. There was only the words and the direction they pointed, and the understanding, instantaneous and complete, that everything I had built at that table was worth less than wherever those words were going. I had kept accounts my entire adult life. That morning, I closed the ledger. The first thing I did after following him was throw a party. I had one community left to me, the tax collectors, the sinners, the people who lived on the wrong side of every line the righteous drew, and I wanted them to meet him. So I opened my house and I filled it. Tax collectors and their associates, eating and drinking in the same room as Jesus and his disciples. The Pharisees noticed. They always noticed.
Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?
The question of someone who wants the answer without the confrontation. Jesus heard it anyway.
It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners, to repentance.
Go and learn what this means. He quoted Hosea at them, a prophet they knew, a text they had read, and told them they had not yet understood it. I looked around my house at the collection of people I had assembled, the least respectable gathering in Capernaum, the ones nobody invited anywhere, and I understood that I had, accidentally, thrown the most representative dinner of the kingdom that had yet occurred. Not because we were particularly worthy, because he had come for exactly this. The first followers were fishermen, people the educated looked down on. And then there was me, the collaborator, the one who had sold himself to the occupying empire for a share of its take. Of all the unlikely people at that table, I was the most unlikely. And I've never forgotten what that means about who the invitation is for.
Matthew spent his adult life keeping accounts. He knew what people owed, what Rome demanded, what could be collected, and what remained after every transaction was complete. Then Jesus walked up to his table and introduced him to an entirely different economy: grace. What is striking is that Jesus did not require Matthew to repair his reputation before calling him. He did not tell him to become respectable, prove his repentance, or somehow balance the moral ledger of his life. He simply said, "Follow me." And Matthew got up. Grace came first. Transformation followed. Then, almost immediately, grace began moving through Matthew toward others. The man who had been excluded opened his home to other excluded people and brought them into the presence of the one who had welcomed him. That is what grace does when we truly receive it. It changes not only how we understand ourselves, but how we see everyone still sitting at the tables we have left behind. Jesus did not look at Matthew and see only what he had done. He saw who Matthew could become if he followed. And Christ still walks toward people whom others have already calculated, categorized, and written off. His invitation remains astonishingly simple: follow me. The question is whether, when he calls, we are willing to close the ledger and get up. To be continued.